Welcome back to the Inside Lacrosse MLL podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined as always by Kyle Devitt, and we are pumped up to be bringing you this edition of the podcast. A lot going on. Obviously, we're coming off of a week in which there were no games, but never fear. There's been a lot happening in the lacrosse world. We'll touch on some of it, primarily with our interview with Jeremy Thompson, who finished up his NLL season with the Edmonton Rush 2 weeks ago and says that he is getting ready to get started with the Florida launch, although he is currently taking up an inactive spot on the roster. We'll see if that changes and he's able to make his debut versus what may or may not be his brother and cousin, Miles and Ty's, debut with the Rochester Rattlers Sunday afternoon, 1 p.m. in Rochester. We will get to that shortly. We'll get to that interview shortly. And before we do all that, I'm going to stop talking and make some room for my boy Kyle. What's up, buddy?
What's up, man? How we doing?
I'm good. Are you where? How would you put your level of fatigue as a result of the NCAA championship weekend sapping so much of your lacrosse watching strength, in contrast with how excited you are to kind of hit the ground running as far as the, I don't know, second third of the MLL season gets underway?
I mean, it's funny, like, editor extraordinaire Matt Kinnear asked me to do some tweeting, for the NCAAs, for you guys so they could have some, you know, some material to mine when things got slow. And it kind of felt like just watching it and then typing it, and it was like half analysis, half like jokes. And of course he didn't retweet any of the funny things. Got a lot of new followers though from the ones that he did retweet, which were largely negative. Thanks, Matt Kinnear. I'm a jerk on the internet, thanks to you.
Well, I mean, we certainly don't want you breaking character.
No, not at all. So, you know, it was fun. It's different when I live tweet an MLL game. I feel like more people hate it than when I live tweet an NCAA game, but it was a lot of fun, but I'm ready to just get back into it. I'm sitting here talking to you, rubbing my hands, waiting for MLL games. And, we got two tonight. It's Friday and we're taping this. We got Boston, New York tonight and Charlotte, Denver tonight as well.
Yeah. It's, figurative and literal. And before we really didn't plan super well for this podcast. And it's largely a function of coming off of championship weekend, the Tourton, and everything else that this week entails. But, there is one thing that before we dive into, the games this weekend and what you want to say about them. I want to build on something that came out of this championship week, and it is kind of focusing or shifting the focus from, you know, May to August when the NCAA Rules Committee will meet, and potentially install a shot clock. And, I think, Kyle, you're in a unique position to speak to the quality of the MLL rules because of how closely you follow the league in comparison to the NCAA rules, given the fact that you coach under those rules. Paul Carcaterra said, kind of in passing this week, that he feels like the MLL version of the rules are the best possible version of the rules. Do you agree with that statement?
I think for the caliber of players that play in the MLL, yes. I think I would add a caveat to that, that if you're going to put a 60 second shot clock into D3 teams and D2 teams and D1 teams, it's going to be a disaster. It's not going to work out right away. It's something you have to play up to. And also I think coaches are going to have to entirely change their style. And certain coaches like to coach offense very locked down in the NCAA. No one in the MLL coaches lockdown offense. You know, it's one of the things that you have to adjust to where games have become more defensive as of late. Teams have, you know, gotten better with implementing zones and hybrids and switches and jumps and, defending the pick and roll. You're going to have to really defend a lot more, you know, one-on-one stuff, like the MLL does. But the problem is at the lower levels, you don't have the player that is the caliber of I'm a one-on-one guy. I can go beat anyone on the earth. And if you have that guy, that's good. But how many teams have that guy and that guy is actually telling the truth?
Well, you jumped to the follow-up. You didn't answer the actual question. Are the MLL rules the best possible iteration of the rules?
I mean, I tried to answer that. I think they are for the highest level of play, but they are not for the NCAA. So the thing that's lost in this whole shot clock thing, and I know that that Kark and Quint and Amon and all those guys, they cover D1. You know, they're not thinking about the D3 school in New Hampshire. You know, they're not thinking about the new program in like Arkansas, you know, that's trying to have a D3 team. That level is not going to be able to play with a 60-second shot clock. You know, D1, D2, the higher level teams, sure, top 25, even top 40, you know, of D1, I'm sure they can all play with a shot clock. They'll figure it out. But there's like almost what, 300 something D3 teams? How many of those D3 teams are going to be able to play with that?
The standard is, what does play mean? And I think that that's ultimately like what needs to be answered. Cause I would say that it's a little presumptuous to assume that they aren't thinking of the implications, they being anybody advocating for a shot clock, be they a broadcaster, a coach, whatever, isn't thinking about all levels of the game. And I think that those who are advocating for that certainly probably do so realizing that the area of the game that's most in need of it is high level Division I. But I think that the idea that the lower level Division II and Division III programs wouldn't be able to adapt is faulty, at least in the prospect of, like, the game would feature zero goals or some, you know, dramatic departure from what currently exists. I think that, you know, of course there'd be an adjustment period. I don't think there would ever cease to be an adjustment period. And I think that, you know, everything that we've seen in the way that style of basketball that's been played both professionally and collegiately over the last 40 to 50 years underscores that. My argument is there are two main, benefits of sweeping rule changes that derive from a shot clock. The first is a simplification of the understanding of the rules to, you know, both among participants and among fans and prospective fans. And I realize that there are some who will argue that we shouldn't be changing the game for prospective fans, and I agree with that to a degree, but I would argue that there are too many lacrosse players who don't know the rules and don't understand the total nuances of the game. So I would say that the way in which the rules can be simplified by virtue of this is a benefit. And then the second benefit is much more tangible and substantial, and I think that it's exactly what you addressed. College lacrosse coaches will have to relinquish some control by virtue of the fact that there is a preset change of possession. Because the thing that is most within their control, I would argue, is the ability to determine the length and number of possessions in a game. And when you have a shot clock that is artificially doing that for you, it really limits the things that you can do outside of that. And it forces you to focus on some of the other elements of coaching that I think if we were to spend a long, long time talking about them, we would agree are all better or preferred. So I'm making my own stance pretty clear as it relates to this. And that's fine. But I think that there's a real risk in losing the forest for the trees when it relates to being a little bit too conservative in the approach to the prospect of adding a shot clock.
I think what people are ignoring, and I made this this is the most minor point ever, and people would never think of this that aren't in the industry or aren't in coaching. One of the things about lacrosse is that's problematic, and the reason it's not being added more at, you know, schools that are smaller, in scope that want to add another sport. Lacrosse isn't at the top of the list because one, it's already expensive. The high roster size kind of offsets that, but I mean, you're looking at equipment costs, you know, field costs, and now you're going to add a shot clock cost. I mean, I think that the people that are going to resist this are not the coaches. It's going to be the ADs at the smaller schools, not the bigger schools. I mean, we might be looking at a situation where D1 lacrosse has a shot clock and D3 lacrosse doesn't, just because of the cost. And that's crazy, but I work in this world. I know this world, and that's real. That's real. And people, no one's talking about it. No one's considered it unless they're in the industry. I think it's kind of a big deal. You know, and
I agree with you, but I also think that there are a number of different ways in which the costs can be either defrayed or implemented differently. And I think that the idea of a additional shot clock operator is much more substantial in terms of cost than the hard cost of a displayable clock, which, you know, can be in the area. First of all, I would argue that most athletic departments already have portable displayable clocks for a lot of different sports, whether they be track or basketball. And then in addition to that, I would, or football. And then in addition to that, I would say that there's, you know, two different possibilities. Is the shot clock going to be conducted by a fourth official? Is it going to be conducted by a employee of the athletic department, like a sports information director, or could it be operated by a student administrator? And obviously, all of these hold either cost or problematic situations. But am I missing a cost in there that is substantial?
I think you're very not. I don't think that a lot of schools have a portable shot clock. When, if they have it, it's not for, it's for, shot clocks are for basketball for the most part. There's no, and a lot of teams that have lacrosse do not have football and don't have that facility. So, I mean, I'm just looking at from my perspective, just going and coaching at games, and I've been coaching for over 10 years now, and I can count on probably two hands. You know, use both my hands and count how many schools have all those things that you just said that you think that a lot of schools have. I think that's definitely missing in a lot of the application. A lot of lacrosse teams don't play on the football field, even if the school has football, you know, and now they're going to have to. I think the hassle is so large that people don't understand, you know, that that is a huge question. If I'm a coach, I don't want to kid operating the shot clock. Are you kidding me? That kid makes one mistake, it's the whole game. You know, if it's going to be another official, that official makes one mistake, it's the whole game. It's got to be something.
That's not a reason not to do it, because that argument can be made for every single call, whether it's made by an official or anybody else involved in the game. I mean, you already have a student in a lot of instances controlling the game clock, which is also, as we saw in the Loyola Virginia game, very much indicative of the outcome of the game. Fear of mistake is not a reason not to do something.
No, it's not, but it's a consideration. It has to go into the decision a little bit. Maybe it's like one-tenth of a percent, but like if you're looking at this, I think the coaches are – there are half the coaches are probably like, yeah, let's do it. We got great players. We're going to crush teams. And the other half are like, oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. I have one kid that can take the ball to the rack, you know, and I'm going to have to put in so many different offenses and so many, there's such a disparity. Like people love the parody now. And like, you know, teams like Lehigh and stuff coming out of, you know, the basement coming up and now being ranked in the top 20, you know, teams like that, like that's not going to happen anymore. That's not going to happen as much because the focus, the onus is going to be on collecting all this offensive talent now. And it's all the teams that already have the leg up in that, the rich are only going to get richer in the short term. In the long term, is it going to help the game? 1,000%. I'm in for it. I think it matters how you implement it, how long it's going to be. Is it going to be 2 minutes? It's going to be 90 seconds. It's going to be 60 seconds. What's it going to be? You know, are you going to start it when they touch the foot in the box? Are you going to start it when they get possession? Are you going to start the clock when it crosses half field? Like, what are the considerations? You know, you can't start a 60 second. I don't see starting the shot clock as soon as the other team touches it like they do in the MLL. Because that's going to be a disaster. That's going to be bad shot central. And teams are going to live and die by the one guy they have that can crank or get a shot off or the guy that can get open, in the crease. And I think that's going to create a whole bucket full of problems in the short term.
Well, that's, about as long as I want to spend talking about that. So now is probably a good time to talk to Jeremy, wouldn't you say?
Sounds good.
And the Inside Lacrosse MLL podcast continues with Jeremy Thompson, who's had a very big week as far as, you know, pretty much all aspects of the lacrosse life are concerned, and is looking like he may make his debut with the Florida Launch this weekend against the Rochester Rattlers, depending on a little bit of a roster flexibility issue. So, Jeremy, first of all, thank you so much for your time and joining us on the podcast. And I suppose just to kind of kick things off, how do you kind of put into context what it was like to be able to watch Miles and Lyle, your younger brothers, win the Twarton Trophy last night?
Oh, man, you know, thanks again. You know, it's been an honor to, you know, be on the show here today. And, you know, it's just, as an older brother and looking down at the two younger boys, it just, I really had too much words to say about it. It's just, you know, as older brother looking down on, you know, looking at them and, you know, just looking at some of the things that we've been through and, you know, younger siblings together and, you know, in the backyard. And that's really where it started. You know, along with my father, I know one of the biggest things that he, you know, taught us as, you know, children and to teach our children is time. And, you know, that's the best thing you can do is give any child anything in life, really, because everyone has a gift, right? And we're all put here on earth for something. And I think as long as you have patience and time for things, things will come your way and they'll work out for the best interest of yourself and the people around you. You know, so that being said, it just speaks for itself what Miles and Lyle have done for themselves this year. And it's so, I can't speak enough how huge it is for our people, a stepping stone, you know, to set that example, to be a role model for our people and all people really. But, you know, I think the reason why I point toward our people is because of, I think the struggle it is for our communities to, you know, get out the reserves and go out and explore, to take the ticket to the next level. And I know you watched a little clip of the piece at the, not too sure if you watched the piece on the ESPN, but, you know, I think a couple of key points is, you know, drugs, alcohol gets in the way. And it consumes them, you know, and in a way where they can't control it, and it takes their mind off their opportunities in life that might be in set for them in stone that are ahead of them. You know, so I can't, you know, it's definitely, you know, for myself last night, it was just, I was on Twitter, I was on the Torton, you know, Del Oliver's site there, and I was just, it was nerve wracking for me. And once I found out, like, you know, they had the women's listing coming up, and then, all right, next, the men are up for tour time list here, and then me and my wife, we had our phones on, we're just waiting, and it was like, you know, it was definitely an exciting, overwhelming feeling, and, you know, and it's still going on right now, you know, that overwhelming feeling where, you know, you have that proudness and that pride inside of yourself still living, and it does forever. And, you know, so for myself, you know, it's just, you know, once I found out, I was just so happy. Like, I just was, it was funny. My wife sent out a tweet last night about, you know, me jumping all over the room, you know, just because I have two little kids, right? And, you know, I was just so happy. And I just wanted to, you know, share that expression with my kids and my wife. And, so that was it in a nutshell, you know, pretty much what happened throughout last night, you know, seeing and then, you know, a little bit before, you know, what happened throughout the leading up to the Torton with the boys this season.
Jeremy, you've had a pretty interesting career, both, you know, playing at Syracuse and in the NLL and the MLL. What struck me about your development is you've kind of gone from the face-off guy that scored and stayed on for the offense to being kind of a do-it-all throwback almost mini, especially in the MLL. Kind of talk about how that has happened, how you've had to manage all these different roles, so far, in your career.
My dad, I grew up playing, old school lacrosse, I guess you could say. My dad, back in the day, as you know, there wasn't really no line, there was no offense, no defense, and that's what our dad basically, you know, preached to us back in, you know, to a player, you know, to have more than just one arsenal in your pocket, not to just be an offensive player or score goals, because in the lacrosse world, you know, it's so easy to, you know, get caught up in, you know, just different things and, you know, different things on the field. But I think the more that you have in your arsenal that you can do on the field, the more effective you can be. And, you know, I'm just saying for myself that, you know, I had more work to do. And I think it's just, for myself, I'm just focusing on one thing after another because I grew up playing offense and I excelled pretty well in the minor system growing up and then eventually into the juniors and then in high school. And then, you know, I kind of made my name for myself at Syracuse with my face and off and, you know, and not just being a face off focal, but then, you know, being able to go out and score goals. And then I think right from there, my interest, once I got, you know, turned into NLL and MLL, you know, I got interested in being, wanted to know, the ins and outs about defense to be an all around player. You know, so for myself, that's how I really kind of went about, you know, focusing myself on, you know, just bettering myself in every area of the, you know, off the field and on the field, you know, in different areas.
So Jeremy, you're coming off, semifinal finish with the Edmonton Rush and the NLL, a really fine season for you. And as you turn your focus to this Florida launch season, one of the things about the MLL this year is that the World Championships are smack dab in the middle of the campaign. What are your thoughts just on how this MLL season is an opportunity to prepare for playing with the Iroquois Nationals in very meaningful World Championships?
I was very excited when, once I found out, you know, with the franchise, you know, finally moving from Hamilton and going down to Florida, you know, especially being down in Sunshine, you know, down in Florida, you know, it was very exciting all winter, you know, I was kind of just preparing, you know, in and out of, you know, with the NL and mostly focusing in on, you know, with my team out in Edmonton, but, you know, for the most part, you know, in the back of my mind, you know, I really felt, you know, I really do feel strongly. And, you know, I think a lot of the staff that put together, you know, a pretty good team, with the Iroquois Nationals, you know, through in the fall time and leading into over the winter time and, you know, throughout the springtime. But, you know, there hasn't been a lot of get together with Iroquois Nationals, you know, but in the next couple of weeks and next month or so here, once, you know, I got all the, you know, college guys out, you know, out of school now and we're able to get together as a unit. You know, so we're definitely, you know, working toward, you know, being, you know, a full unit out there, right, from both ends of the field. We got a lot of strong guys, you know, two-way guys that can, you know, good athletes, which is something we have had trouble in the past with the Iroquois Nationals, with having, you know, middies being our weakness. But, you know, this year coming up, you know, we feel really strongly about our midfield, you know, both ends of the field, you know, tag, and then also, you know, strong goaltending. But, I was very excited, you know, to also to be a part of a new franchise, a start, and, you know, down in Florida. You know, they're off to a good start down there. You know, I do believe they're 3-1, I think. You know, so I was very excited to, you know, just to be a part of, you know, a new family down there and, you know, a new atmosphere. You know, but kind of going from there, you know, kind of just waiting on the call to, you know, be a part of the system. And, you know, I'm willing to do and, you know, have the time, patience, and to waiting to, you know, for the phone call to get, you know, to be ready, most likely, be ready any time to go. And, you know, that's where I'm at right now. I've been training pretty good, since my NL season has been off, you know, personal trainer. And, you know, so I'm focused, I'm physically, mentally, you know, kind of working on all those different things and to, really, you know, getting it nailed down into, you know, focusing on the things I do with Florida, you know, once I get my chance, and then, you know, eventually it'll carry over into a huge, you know, season for us for the World Games. And, you know, like I said, we really, really feel strongly about, you know, our team this year, and coaching staff and the whole, all staff there.
Jerry, I don't want to jump too far ahead, but there's a very plausible scenario that in maybe less than a year's time, you could be playing in the MLL with your two brothers and your cousin. that's definitely something that I think, you know, guys like me think about the MLL. We talk about stuff like that because the players have a lot of input in where they can play in the league. Would that blow your mind? How fun would that be?
I think that's potentially it's a good question. I like it because it's something that's always been in the back of our minds as a family, as brothers, you know, it'll be huge. You know, I think for franchise and, you know, for what we stand for and, you know, how we represent ourselves. And, you know, it's always, I think it's been a goal for us, a dream for us, you know, to eventually come all together. You know, I know right now I'm, you know, signed in with Florida and Miles got drafted to Rochester. But, you know, but then, you know, I don't, like, again, you're right. You don't want to jump ahead, but it's kind of about, you know, living in the moment. But, you know, if it happens, it happens. But if not, then, you know, that's the way it was meant to be out, meant to play out. And, you know, that's what I'm all about is, you know, kind of living into the moment and, you know, not worrying about too much what happened yesterday and, you know, and then getting ready for tomorrow, but then also staying in the moment. So it's good. It's definitely a good thought. A thing to think about, and you know, so.
And if the consolation is playing with Casey Powell and Brett Queener and Kevin Crowley, there are probably worse things in the world, right?
No, I you know, in the lacrosse world, it's just definitely we're all family, and you know what? No matter where we go in life, it's all about building our families and about taking care of each other. And I think that's what's so awesome about the MLL and NLL is that, you know, everyone takes care of each other and we're all friends and we all have, you know, it's somewhere down the line it all ties in. And, I've grown up, you know, being in the Syracuse area, watching the Pauls play. It was, you know, they were actually, you know, there's a connection right there, you know, of being, you know, good role models and, you know, watching some good lacrosse in the area was something really good to see. You know, to see, you know, Mikey and I didn't really get to see Mike, Casey play too much, but I did have the opportunity to play with him up in Hamilton and it was awesome. Just the stories that he's had, you know, because he played senior A ball in my northern up in Opposition A box lacrosse. And it was just awesome just to hear the stories that he had and they were similar to mine and that's how we could relate. And, you know, I'm all friends with everybody, and that's what it's really all about is that friendship and, you know, building that and continuing that.
Well, Jeremy, we know you've got places to go, cops to avoid getting pulled over by, which was an instance during this interview, so we really appreciate both, you know, the New York State Police as well as your patience on this one. We wish you the best of luck as you get, you know, kind of in the mix into this MLL season and certainly looking forward to seeing you play out in Denver.
Hey, Terry. Thanks a lot. It's good to hear from you, and I appreciate everything.
Well, we want to thank Jeremy Thompson for his time. Certainly very generous with it with us. You know, Kyle, I think every time I got an opportunity to talk to, you know, primarily Jeremy because he is the Thompson that I know the best, but and the member of the Native community within the lacrosse community that I know best as well. But, you know, it's just it. I'm continually struck by how close to the core of his values lacrosse sits and how genuinely he speaks about it. And, you know, it's not as if it's, you know, the skeptic can't believe that, you know, maybe he's putting on a front a little bit. It's just that, you know, I consider myself to be pretty skeptical in a lot of situations, and I don't think that's the case with the way that Jeremy talks about how important lacrosse is to him. And it's really helpful for somebody like me who can get too wrapped up in the results of games or, you know, all the other ancillary aspects of the sport to hear somebody talk about how valuable, you know, the creator's game is from a lifestyle and a health perspective.
I'm generally really excited when someone's excited to talk to me. So that was cool. He's candid. Like, I like that. You know, he's laughing in the middle of the question I ask him. That was pretty cool. Like, he knew it was coming. But you know, at the same time, he answered it really honestly. And, I always appreciate honesty on all levels.
All right. Well, let me, turn the keys of this car over to you. You seem pretty excited, speaking of enthusiasm, to talk about this week of MLL action. So it being Friday and there being two games today, why don't you, just dive right in and talk about, you know, the first one up. Are you going?
No, it's in New York. It's not in Boston. New York, Boston, first game. I mean, you know, both these teams are 500 right now. And the thing is, we talked on the conference call to both Tuck and, Spleena, and we'll get to the conference call later, but just to preview this game real quick, Boston has given up the least amount of goals and New York is tied with Denver for the most goals scored. And the one thing Spallina said is basically like, you know, it's kind of a misnomer that we've scored that many goals because we had 18 in the first game against Rochester. And he's right. But New York has looked good and bad, and they're so streaky. It's just nuts. You know, whereas Boston's consistency has been in net and with the defense, which is not something that has happened, but their offense has really definitely stalled, in the game before last, against Charlotte. They blew Charlotte away. Charlotte had no chance. But I think that they're so streaky on offense now, and they're not just relying on like Rabel or Buchanan like everyone thinks. I personally think that if Ryan Boyle gets 2 points, they win every game. But if he gets no points, they have a 50-50 shot of losing. You know, maybe even more than that. Maybe 75% of chance of losing, because they're in the first game of the season, you know, against Chesapeake, he was basically a spectator. You know, and even though Boston won that game, he didn't do much. And I think he needs to actually be involved. And I asked a couple weeks ago, asked Tuck a few weeks ago about Poske, because we haven't seen Matt Poske yet, you know, former MVP, Offensive Player of the Year. And I guess Poske is not coming back until July, after the All-Star game and, Worlds and whatnot. So we're not going to see him for a while. And Jack Rice is the man, and talk about streaky. He's super streaky. He's an inside guy that can shoot and finish. You know, he's the poor man's Matt Poske, but you know, unless he can score inside on New York, like, you know, Boston's going to have to rely on their defense to win the game. And I don't, you know, they've done well so far, but New York's got a ton of firepower.
What are you expecting to see out of Ekin Grenlund?
Absolute bloodbath and carnage. I think, you know, both those guys, I mean, with Grenlund not playing in the, on the U.S. team, you know, pulling out due to the injury during the tryout process, Ek being the man, the only faceoff guy they're taking besides, you know, some extra guys that could spell him every once in a while. You know, Ek's going to want to prove himself. Grenlund's going to want to get some revenge for not getting in there, but Beast is pretty nicked up. I mean, dude posts pictures of him on Instagram, like bruises all over his body after the Chesapeake game. Like he just fought a war. So, I don't know. We'll see. I know X fresh. So that's going to definitely be an advantage for him.
And out in Denver, we've got the Charlotte Hounds, heading out to altitude. You know, Charlotte needs a win. You wrote about it 2 weeks ago. You wrote about a lot of the issues that they were having. You know, what's the status with their rookies?
They seem to think that everybody that isn't on Duke that they drafted is going to be playing. So like Shannon Chuck, Laconi, Ward, all those guys, they seem to think that all those guys are going to play like today. But also, I mean, just going back, I said we'd go back to the conference call because it was a salty, salty conference call. These coaches were not happy, to speak with the media this week. It was really, really upsetting because I would ask a question or like someone else asked a question. They'd be like, yeah, no, I think we were just trying something different there. I don't know what we're going to do there. You know, and it's weird that now that they look forward to personnel questions as opposed to strategy questions or formation questions or anything like that. When in the past they were like, I'm not answering roster questions. You know, they'd rather take the easy way out. And maybe it's just, you know, the decompression from NCAAs is affecting everyone around the lacrosse world. But being real salty, not going to get you anywhere. I think Charlotte's a mess on defense. They're an absolute mess on defense. They can't switch on picks. Boston tore them apart. They couldn't clear the ball. I mean, you got a real problem if you got Hawkins on your team. You can't clear the ball. Like, I'm sorry. Like, that's one of the things that guy does best. Denver's Denver. Again, we talked about this kind of like last week where like Denver's going to win games. Yay. Cool. I show me in the playoffs. You know, I don't even want to like acknowledge Denver as a team for a lot of stuff. I mean, they're really fun to watch. I like watching them, but it's kind of like watching a machine, watching a robot play. And knowing that the robot is going to smush this tiny person it's playing against, but at the same time, you're waiting for the robot to fail, you know, have an error, system error and shut down.
Yeah, but we're not going to do that for 10 more weeks.
I know. I just, they're, Denver's going to crush Charlotte. And like, I'm not, I'm sorry. Like, I don't make a lot of prognostications that are like that extreme, even though I'm given to huge hyperbole, at times. They're going to crush Charlotte. Charlotte's not ready. And, I think that's, it's a shame because Charlotte was one of the best teams and now they're going to rely on rookies to like have them beat the best team in the league. Yeah. Sorry. It's not going to happen.
No shot of it being like one of those, you know, Japanese pitchers coming over. Nobody's familiar with his stuff and he just comes out and, you know, throws like a one hitter in his first outing.
Oh, a trap game? No.
No, not a trap. That's not a trap game. That's like a debut unfamiliarity game.
Yeah, I mean, it would be if Denver had anyone that I didn't think was able to handle those guys athletically. And that's the one thing that Denver is going to crush you with is their athleticism. Like the people go on runs against them. The Ohio Machine almost beat them. Like let's be real. The Ohio was up on them by four. We talked about that with Baum last week. That was a great game for both teams and it was a gut check. And Denver came back and just roared back and crushed and just tossed daggers at the end to finish it. So I think, and the reason they did that is their athleticism. They're so fast, so strong, and they don't get tired. And I think that what you see with a lot of these teams is they will get tired. And who's going to get tired first? A guy that's played, oh, I don't know, 5 times in the past couple months, or the guy that's played 20 games in the last couple months. You know, I think if you're relying on rookies, you're relying on guys that, yeah, they're in shape, but they're also care. No one goes through an entire lacrosse season without carrying an injury. No one. No one in the world. It just doesn't happen. So you're taking guys on that are very talented and very good. I highly rate Charlotte's draft and all those guys that are going to play tonight. I think they're going to make an impact, but are they going to make it in the fourth quarter? And I think the answer is no.
Last week we talked to Peter Baum, and he mentioned that he was going to be making his debut against his former volunteer assistant coach, Matt Abbott. That happens tomorrow night at Navy Marine Corps Stadium as the Ohio Machine and the Chesapeake BayHawks both meet 1-3. You know, Pete talked about how his team just needs to learn how to win, and I think that there's a lot of wisdom in that. On the flip side, you know, they're playing a team that knows how to win and just needs to do it. Where do you give the edge in that equation, all things being equal?
I think Chesapeake's in trouble matching up with that midfield. And I mean, I never thought I'd say like the Chesapeake BayHawks are going to have trouble matching up against the Ohio Machine midfield after the last 2 years. But I definitely think that's the case going into the game. Brian Spallina out with a broken jaw, for this game and probably a multitude of other games.
Yes. I would say for the foreseeable future.
Yes, maybe forever. I'm not going to say that. But you know, that means they're going to have to play different guys. And one of the things I talked to Cottle about on the call was, you know, how much is the cap going to handcuff you going forward? You know, and part of the reason I asked that question is they just traded for CJ Costabile to help out on faceoffs, but they traded a second round pick next year for him. Why'd you do that? Well, like I basically was like, why did you do that when you have 10 midfielders that would start on half the teams in the league or every team in the league or be a second line guy? And with you, they're struggling to get on for cap. And he basically said like, we're not willing to change that part of what we're doing. So they're sticking to their guns. They think that, you know, that they can win with this team is basically what he told me. He's like, listen, we haven't won so far. I've been unhappy with how we played, but I'm not giving up the guys we have for assets we don't have until I feel like we just can't win with that person. So I think that says a lot for Kyle's belief in his team. Hopefully his team backs him up because that's kind of a risky proposition to take, in my opinion.
Would you have been so do you think it's the value of the second round pick as compared to a proven MLL midfielder commodity? Because I think that there's also an aspect of hoarding where there's value in not letting that player contribute for a team that you're going to be competing with in championship weekend or in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think, you know, I mean, New York is probably going to be there. They definitely have the talent. And do you want to give them another talented midfielder? Probably not, but you could have dealt for someone else. you could have grabbed another backup faceoff guy anywhere. And also, he knew that Dylan Levings was going to be available, the guy he drafted out of Yale, who was one of the best faceoff guys in the NCAA the last couple of years. So he knows that guy is probably going to be in camp. He didn't say if he was going to play, but he's going to be in camp. Adam Rand didn't even dress in the last game. So they're definitely concerned about faceoffs. They should be more concerned about their 6-on-6 defense because it's pretty poor, and that's how teams are beating them.
And then hitting the last one of the weekend, you know, we've already discussed it a little bit, but the Florida launch at the Rochester Rattlers, you know, obviously an opportunity for a lot of excitement given the prospect of some debuts. But at the same time, I mean, you know, there's an element of, are these two teams kind of for real? You know, Rochester being 2-2, I don't know. I don't want to say like too far away from expectations because there's some talent on the roster, but you know, Florida being 3-1, that is a surprise. They are not the Florida launch, but at the same time, they're 0-1 on the road, and here they are on the road again.
I mean, this is game of the week. The funny thing is, like, I write this column every Tuesday, it goes up every Tuesday, and I never really know what I'm going to do every week until the games play. I already know what I'm writing about. Unless one of these other games is like the greatest game ever played, I'm writing about this game. And the debut of at least Miles Thompson. I don't think Suter didn't think Ty was going to play on the call earlier, but that could change. Cockerton is going to play. He's on the active now for Rochester. So we're going to see a totally different look. Wolf is on a trip with Duke, like a senior trip, so he will not be playing this week, maybe in 2 weeks. Rochester is a great story this year. When they lose games, it's because they get into shootouts. You can't get into it. They're not built for a shootout. You know, Bradman is coming along now. Kind of had his little moment talking trash with Jesse Schwartzman scoring 2 goals. Suter seemed to like it. He was like, yeah, well, at least he's fired up, you know. So I just can't wait to watch these guys play in the MLL. Hopefully they gel real quickly. I think having Stephen Boyle behind is going to help with that. Having Cockton lock up Lefty Snipes on the other wing is going to be great for them. Turry needs to get more involved in the offense, for Rochester. But, you know, as far as Florida goes, it's the Casey Powell show until it's not. As foolish as that may sound and base as that may sound, it really is. And until teams can figure out a way to stop him, from distributing, from having a hand in almost every goal they score, they're going to be in trouble and the launch are going to be dangerous. You know, that being said, I mean, what do? Do you shut them off? You shut them off, they're just going to take them out of attack and throw them on mid. You know, that's what Ross has been doing, with Powell, and that's how he's moved him around. I think there aren't a ton of other facilitators on that team, but again, you got Crowley, who plays well with and without the ball. You know, you could have a bunch of guys coming in and playing and making a huge impact.
There you go. Anything else about this weekend that you're getting fired up for?
You know, I'm just excited for it to be back and excited to have more eyeballs on the sport, more eyeballs in the league. Again, you know, watch the games tonight. Boston, New York is at 7:30. Charlotte, Denver's at 9:30. They're either on YouTube or ESPN. I don't believe any of them are on CBS Sports, but if you're watching CBS Sports Network inside the MLL, I will be a feature talking head on that.
I actually think the Denver game is a CBS.
Is it?
I think so.
Might be, it's in, yeah, that would make sense because of the tape delay and It's a late game. No, there you go. CBS Sports Network. Check it out. It'll be a good game if you're a Denver fan.
All right, Kyle. Well, then that will do it, for this edition of the Inside Lacrosse MLL podcast. Thank you. Thanks, Jeremy Thompson. And, we'll catch you again next week.
Shout out to my dad. Happy birthday, Dad.
Happy birthday, Mr. Devitt. Inside Lacrosse Podcast.